Hello, and welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton from eejournal.com. And folks, you know it's another banner week in EE, because Molex just rolled out another industrial connector. Can you feel the excitement? I know, it's palpable. To make things even more exciting, power component companies unveiled even more analog power supplies. Yeah. And Brown University also revealed that they're working on a new brain sensor that can wirelessly communicate with a computer. Yawn. Wait, what? Yep, it's true. Analog components are big business these days. But what about that brain sensor? So Brown University just announced that a team of their neuroscientists have developed an implantable wireless brain sensor that can relay real-time broadband signals from up to 100 neurons located in freely moving objects. This is not a PowerPoint-only study at this point. Nope. This team from Brown University have implanted these wireless sensors in a variety of large animal models for over a year now. The neuroscientists were then able to observe, record, and analyze the signals emitted from the scores of neurons in particular parts of the animal model's brain. In order to accomplish this, however, this team from Brown also had to then design the custom ICs that would convert those neural signals into digital data. So let's back up a second. I can hear you loud and clear. But Amelia, haven't we heard of this kind of technology before? I mean, other than on Star Trek or during that Samsung keynote at CDN Live. Well, yes and no. Other than fanciful sci-fi, we have been hearing about this type of sensor technology for some time now, but until now we were locked into a single position with a wired harness to make that sensor work. Well, this itty-bitty pill-sized sensor takes that wired business right off the table. And the fact that all of the neural signal conversion is done on-chip and within the device is also pretty cool. So, what's in this new brain sensor? Well, this new implantable wireless sensor is actually a laser-welded, hermetically sealed titanium can, which is about the size of a large pill. About 2 inches long, 1.5 inches wide or so, and about 9 millimeters thick. This tiny titanium pill contains the whole signal processing system. DSP, anyone? DSP? Which includes a lithium-ion battery, ultra-low power ICs designed especially at Brown for signal processing and conversion, wireless radio and infrared transmitters, and a copper coil for recharging. And all the wireless and charging signals pass through an electromagnetically transparent sapphire window. That's really cool. So, what can this bad boy do? This sensor transmits data at 24 megabytes per second via 3.2 and a 3.8 gigahertz microwave frequencies to an external receiver. After charging for 2 hours, delivered wirelessly through the scalp via induction, okay, that doesn't sound too fun, it can operate for more than 6 hours. Now, don't get too excited about visiting your doctor next week for your checkup and getting outfitted with one of these new devices. Nope. They have not yet been approved for use in humans, as of yet. They were designed, however, with what Brown University is calling translational motivation. I'll leave that one alone. So, if you want to check out this story for yourself, go on over to this week's Fish Fry page on eejournal.com, and there will be a link waiting just for you. And in other news this week, it was announced that TSMC and ARM have taped out their first ARM Cortex A57 processor on TSMC's 16-nanometer FinFET technology. Now, this will be the first 64-bit processor series on TSMC FinFET. Interesting. TSMC is working on a FinFET. Will it work? Will they catch up to Intel in time? Will Intel care? I want to know what you think about this whole FinFET business. Well, after you listen to today's interview, that is. My guest this week is Wilbur Lowe from Cadence Design Systems. And we're talking 16, 14, and 10 nanometer. What's in store for these new process nodes and how the design challenges associated with FinFETs are going to keep us on our toes. Thank you so much for joining me today, Wilbur.
It's my pleasure, Amelia. It's great to be here.
So first, let's talk about FinFETs. Why are 16 and 14 nanometers proving to be a greater interest than, say, 20?
Well, the FinFETs is an interesting thing. So, you know, by the way, I was looking through my kid's room looking for some 3D glasses for you.
Okay.
Because the world is going 3D.
You've
got 3D ICs, people stacking dies, and now you've got 3D transistors.
Yeah.
Moving from planar transistors to 3D transistors. And what I've seen people doing is at 20 nanometers, it's starting to feel like more of an interim node. Because people, it's an expensive node. There's a big transition from 28 to 20.
Sure.
And going to 16 is where people are really seeing the benefits, especially for FinFETs. So if what FinFETs buys you are, number one, you get 30 to 50% more performance, or you get 30 to 50% less power consumption, and you get about 90% less leakage power. So imagine that instead of me having to charge my smartphone, or you charging your smartphone every day or two, you could charge it over, you know, not have to charge it for a week or something, right? And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? And people will willingly go to a new node to get that kind of performance or power.
Sure. So what do you think are proving to be the biggest challenges for FinFETs at 16, 14?
Yeah, so a lot of the challenges at 20 carry over. So at 20, there was layout-dependent effects.
Yeah.
So as you put transistors next to other transistors, there actually will be electrical performance issues that you need to account for. So you basically, your layout becomes what you need to simulate from a circuit designer's perspective. There's double patterning, right? This is where you take a layer and you decompose it into two layers. That's so we can address the lithography limitations. So those still carry over to 16, 14. And then clearly there are new complex rules. There's new layers, local interconnect layers that have to be taken account of. And then at 16 and 14, specifically around FinFETs, FinFETs have a whole host of issues. And it's especially a big deal for the custom designers. Because if I'm a digital designer, the FinFET's captured inside the standard cell. And so he's kind of abstracted from all those issues, right? But if I'm a custom designer, some of the issues behind the FinFETs are you have discrete widths. In a normal transistor, you're allowed to vary the width.
Right.
And then that gives the custom designer a lot of control on the behavior of the transistor. Turns out for FinFET, it's actually discretized. So you actually could just add multiple fins, but each fin has to be the same width and height.
Ah.
So that changes how the circuit designer does his design.
Sure.
So that's one issue. The other issue is parasitics. So imagine, there's a piece of paper. Pretend this is a planar transistor, and I'm standing on the edge of the paper, and I'm looking out around me. Basically, I can't see that far around me.
Yeah.
So that's just like parasitic extraction. I see coupling capacitances a little distance away.
Uh-huh.
I see resistances a little distance away. Now, if I tilt my paper on edge and I'm standing on the edge of my paper, look at everything I can see.
Right.
Right. So now I have all these capacitances and resistances that I need to take into account. And so my extraction problem becomes more difficult. Then that carries forward into simulation. Now I have all these extracted parasitics. How do I simulate them all in a reasonable amount of time? So that's another issue. Another issue is electromigration. So now with FinFETs, I can drive more current, which is great, right? I can get a better performing design. But at the same time, with more current, you have to worry about electromigration.
Sure.
And finally, layout. When I actually do my layout, there's actually a certain set of layout rules where I have to snap my FinFETs to a certain grid because the fins actually have to be aligned.
Ah, okay.
So there's a bunch of issues about layout productivity. How do we make sure that when I'm doing layout as a layout engineer, I'm not sitting there pulling out my ruler every single time just to move a couple transistors.
Right.
I actually have tools to help me improve my productivity.
That makes sense. So when do you think this will be in production?
Well, it's been discussed that Intel is planning on going to production in 2013, so this year. The other foundries will go in production in 2014. That's what's been discussed publicly. Obviously, test chips have been going on for a while now. Cadence has participated in several test chips. We've worked with ARM and Samsung on a 14 nanometer test chip with FinFETs. We've worked with IBM and ARM on a test chip as well. So part of our philosophy is to work early with partners, right? The ecosystem partners, people like ARM, who have core IP, as well as the foundry partners.
Ah, right.
TSMC, Samsung, GlobalFoundries, IBM, ST, to really make sure that our tooling's ready.
Right.
So when we go into production, the methodology set up, you've got the tools, you have all the productivity, so that the user, it's already hard enough to address all these issues, but you don't want them to lose productivity as they go.
Absolutely. So, Wilbur, what do you think the next challenges will be, say, at 10 nanometers?
You know what? The great thing, Amelia, is we love challenges, right? EDA is all about seeing what's ahead and solving those challenges, right?
Yeah.
This is what the engineering teams love, mm-hmm. right? So at 10 nanometers, you're still going to have FinFETs. The back end, there'll be a new type of decomposition on the metal layers. So instead of using what they call litho-etch, there'll be self-aligned double patterning mm-hmm. on the back end. So the tooling will have to change to address that. No major change from a designer's perspective. I'll still interact the same way. At 7 nanometers, things start getting interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert here. I've sat on some papers from people like Gary Patton from IBM. They've talked about a couple things, using different materials for FinFETs, carbon nanotubes.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big area. And so there's a lot of research being done. And again, our philosophy is to kind of partner up with these leaders in the research area and the foundries and to make sure that we're ready.
Great. Well, I think that's all of the questions I have. Thank you so much for joining me, Wilbur. It was a pleasure speaking with
you. Thanks. I really enjoyed it, Amelia. Thank you.
And now it's time for a new segment on Fish Fry called Kickstarter Corner. We all have a little entrepreneur in ourselves somewhere, right? I'm still looking for the right backer for that one project of mine, but we won't talk about that. Well, in this segment, I'm going to highlight some Kickstarter campaigns that I think we should all be interested in, or that I have friends or fans that are involved in, either way. So in this week's Kickstarter Corner, it's the GHT Transport Logger, brought to you by startup company Synonix. The idea is simple. We've all received some kind of package that when you opened the box, you said, "What the heck happened to this?" Or maybe something else along those lines. But determining what exactly caused your board to break, your candy eggs to melt, or your Atari system to malfunction, thank you very much, UPS, well, that could be just about anything, right? Was it excess shock, temperature, humidity along the way, or was just the darn thing broken to begin with? Well, GHT Transport Logger is looking to address these exact mysteries. How do they do it? Well, first, the goods in question and the logger are packed into a package or container ready for the trip ahead. Then you configure the Synonix GHT Transport Logger to log temperature, humidity, shock, and/or orientation using your PC with a simple application program. You also have the option of setting temperature, humidity, and shock limits for which light indicators on the Synonix logger will start blinking should transport conditions exceed your defined limits. I'm thinking that UPS, DHL, and maybe the United States Postal Service, if they ever find a business model that will work, should be interested in this product. Not to mention distributors like DigiKey, Mauser, Avnet. This seems like a Kickstarter campaign that could have some serious legs to it. Also, by pledging different denominations to this campaign to fund the GHT Transport Logger, you can receive different bonuses. $89 will get you one logger, $239 will get you three loggers, and if you donate $1,000, you can get a one-day trip around Iceland with one of the Synonix team members as your personal travel guide. You'll leave early in the morning from Reykjavik and arrive late in the evening. And of course, the trip will be logged by that Synonix logger that you will be able to keep at the end of your trip. All right, I'm raising that $1,000 right now. Gonna start with the couch cushions. Especially if Synonix co-founder Stefan Paulsen takes me up on that pinball match he promised a while back. If you want to send them some money, you should. Or if you want to check out this cool new Kickstarter campaign for yourself, I've included a link on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Check it out. Are you ready? It's coming your way. It's nerdy giveaway time, courtesy of Mauser and Microchip Technology. Do you like Arduino? I know I do. And if you want to enjoy some serious Arduino goodness, I have a microchip T-Chip 003 Chip Kit Starter Pack to give away. Want to know a little bit about this super awesome, yes, you want one kit? The Microchip T-Chip 003 Chip Kit Starter Pack contains everything you need to develop applications with this Arduino-compatible Chip Kit platform. This starter pack includes a UNO 32 development board with an 80 megahertz PIC32 processor, featuring 128K flash and 16K RAM. The basic I/O shield adds a variety of I/O devices, such as buttons, switches, OLED, graphic display, temperature sensor, EEPROM, transistor outputs, and more. The prototype shield kit from NKC Electronics is also included, along with an innovative key that can be used to separate shields easily. Microchip Chip Kit boards work with a multi-platform IDE and a software framework that is compatible with most Arduino based applications. So if you want one of these great kits for your very own, just let me know in the box below the player that you want the kit. Easy as that. Seriously, get posting, folks. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fry page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up, yes, I will be at Design West, that I absolutely should attend, or the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, shoot me a line at amelia@techfocusmedia.com or post a comment on our forums on eejournal.com. For the week of April 5th, 2013, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.